night, everyone. This is Chris Atwood with Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise. We have about 1 minute, actually. It's just about time for us to begin our call. So glad to have all of you here. I'm standing in for Janet Atwood, the author of The Passion Test, Discovering Your Personal Secrets to Living a Life on Fire, which is the inspiration for these calls, The Passions of Real Life Legends. And as you know, those of you who've been with us before, you know that twice a month we interview people who have been inordinately successful at living their passions in their own lives so that all of us can get some clues and learn what are the things that we need to understand in order to discover our passions and live our own personal destiny. You know, everyone on the phone has unique gifts which only you can give. And when you're aligned with the things which are most important to you, with those things which you're passionate about, then you're aligned with your own personal destiny, and we look forward to exploring that more tonight. Now, I'm really excited to be able to share with all of you that Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise has just launched for the first time a hard copy version of our Real Life Legends Club membership, which means that those of you who are not yet members, or those of you who are already members and would like to upgrade and actually receive the CDs and transcripts, printed transcripts and the CDs of this call tonight and our upcoming calls, can do that by going to www.healthywealthywise.com/elite, E-L-I-T-E dot A-S-P. A as in Apple, S as in Sam, P as in Paul. And for those of you that don't know, all of our Real Life Legend Club members have access to the recordings and transcripts of these calls, as well as special gifts from each of our guests. Also, you have access to all the interviews we've done in the past with people like Stephen Covey, Jay Abraham, T. Harv Eker, Jack Canfield, and others. And so if you're not yet a Real Life Legends Club member, go to www.healthywealthyandwise.com/elite, E-L-I-T-E dot A-S-P, and get the whole scoop. And in particular, check out the new hard copy membership so that you can get the CDs and transcripts of this call. I'm so excited about our guest tonight, Dr. Dennis Waitley. And before we get to Dr. Waitley, I want to introduce to you a man who I have gotten to know over the last year and who has become a legend, if you will, in his own right within the internet marketing community. Thelman Knutson is our co-host tonight, and he is the founder and CEO of ListCrusade.com. If you're not yet a member of List Crusade, you definitely want to go and enroll. It doesn't cost anything, but you'll be able to get recorded interviews with with amazing people, not only in the personal development field, but also in the field of internet marketing. So, Thelman, thank you so much for being here with us, and will you introduce our guest tonight?
Absolutely, Chris. Well, thank you so much for inviting me to be here. This is really, really fantastic. Just getting the opportunity to speak with, to learn from people of this caliber it's really, really, really phenomenal. Regardless of what you do with your life, whether you're an internet marketer or whether you run your own business, whether you work in a job that you love, whatever is the case, these are the type of calls, this is the type of information that really builds the foundation for living the kind of life that we all want to try to and live as much as we possibly can, and it makes things so much more enriching and incredible. But with that said, this call is really about what Dennis Waitley has to say. He's one of the most respected authors, speakers, and productivity consultants on high performance and human achievement in the world. He sold over 10 million audio programs. I just said 10 million audio programs in over 14 different languages, and he's the author of 14 books and several international bestsellers, including the number one best-selling book in the Chinese language over the past decade. His audio album, The Psychology of Winning, is the all-time best-selling program on self-mastery. Dr. Waitley has counseled winners in every single field, from Apollo astronauts to Super Bowl champions, from sales achievers to government leaders. He served as a chairman of psychology on the U.S. Olympic Committee's Sports Medicine Council and as president of the International Society for Advanced Education. He counseled returning POWs from Vietnam and conducted simulation and stress management seminars for Apollo astronauts. Dennis Whately is someone to listen to. So, Dennis, are you there?
I am, Kelman, and I didn't recognize that. I applauded because I didn't recognize who I was there. You know, my mother's 96, and she said, "Do you suppose anyone in our family will ever become successful?" And I said, "Yeah, Mom, maybe one of the grandchildren," because she thinks I should get a job. And she said, now you're going to China, and you can't even speak the language. But I'm excited to be with you. You know, it's great to be on the call with you and Chris and everyone, and I really am anxious to pass on any experience that I've learned over my career.
Well, this should be a really fantastic call, but you know, I know a lot of the people listening, whether they've been on the calls in the past or whether this is their first one, will really appreciate getting right into some content. And I know that that's really your main expertise, is actually delivering just some incredible knowledge and ideas here. So I'd like to get started, if you don't mind.
Absolutely.
Beautiful. Okay, well, as you know, the series is called The Passions of Real Life Legends, and I'd really like it if you would just take a few moments to tell us how you went about discovering your own passions, and specifically how they led you to the work that you do today.
Well, that's a great question to begin with, and first I'll have to say that people need to understand that it's never too late to discover your passion, and most multimillionaires are made after the age of 50. So if you're somewhere between 20 and 40 and haven't become a multimillionaire or achieved all that you want to achieve, don't worry. Some of the greatest people in history did it much later in life, because many times about what I'm going to say right now didn't occur to them, or maybe they buried it deep down. You know, when I was about 10 months old, my mom said that she put me out my little jump swing out in the front lawn, and people came by, and in those days there was no pedophiles to worry about, so she said I'd bounce up and down laughing and babble some nonsense to everyone in earshot, and I guess nothing's changed, because it seems as if I still do that today. By the time I was about 3 to 5, I was telling stories and singing songs for neighbors for cookies. And by the time I was 14, I was mayor of my junior high and giving speeches. And by the time I was 16, student body president. And at that time, there's no such thing as a career in public speaking. And there was a war on, the Korean War. So I gave up all of my early passions and stirrings. And I went to the Naval Academy at Annapolis, and I became a warrior and a defender. And I found myself in the 1960s as a carrier-based Top Gun pilot. And my training was to deliver nuclear weapons, and yet my true passion was to develop people rather than defend against them or destroy them. And another thing happened to me. I was raised in a poor family with a lot of alcoholism and divorce, but I rode my bike about 20 miles one way every Saturday because my grandmother was an optimist, and she kindled my passion by telling me that I was going to go far, do good, be something. And she would tell me that as we were planting the victory garden, that we were planting the seeds of greatness. And she said the seeds of greatness are ideas that you learn from people who've been great in their service to others. And my grandmother was my inspiration to dig up my passion, which had been subdued for many years as a carrier-based pilot. And I always thought back to my grandma planting seeds of greatness. And that's why I think that passion is what drives all of us. And you have to stay true to your passion, even though you're going to get off on a tangent when you're chasing some money for your early responsibilities after you get out of college or when you get married. That passion still underlies, and therein lies the secret to your destiny.
Wow. Well, you know, as you're working toward your destiny and really starting to figure out how you tick and what gets you excited and how you can integrate that into your life in a way that everything can be balanced and really work. I know that you personally have worked with heads of corporations. You've worked with Olympic athletes. As we mentioned earlier, you worked with POWs. You've worked with network marketers. You've worked with people with all sorts of different backgrounds. So, Dennis, in your experience, what role does passion play in an individual's success? I mean, can you give us some examples of how that works out for people?
I think I can, Tillman. You know, I've really had a long road on it. You know, Ross Perot was my big brother at the Naval Academy, and he went on to become a billionaire with Electronic Data Systems. He was always a man of passion. Ray Kroc was my next-door neighbor, and as you remember, he founded McDonald's when he was 54, so it's never too late. Ray Kroc always said, love it or leave it. And I think back to the role passion plays, and let's just look back at Steven Spielberg doing his little home movies and always about some great, powerful figure that's going to solve the world's problems. And Andrew Lloyd Webber, as we remember, he wrote Cats and Evita and Man from La Mancha, and he did all these, The Phantom of the Opera. When he was 9 years old, he had a little home theater with puppets. And Steve Coffin, who won the Triple Crown at the age of 17, was riding a bale of hay around his farm, and his father said, put that bale in the truck. And Steve Coffin said, I will as soon as I win the Kentucky Derby. Right? My good friend Jacques Cousteau, before he died, I remember him telling me that he broke both arms, and he was watching the water spider. A little water spider was taking a bubble of air down to her babies in a lake, and he had to swim. He wanted to be an astronaut, but he broke his arms and had to become an aquanaut instead. And he saw the bubble of air in this little spider and wished that he could breathe underwater and invented the aqualung. And as I've looked at people like Bill Gates of Microsoft, Fred Smith of Federal Express, and every great inventor or innovator, they weren't trying to make money. They had an inner fire of passion to drive them rather than a desire for wealth. And that's why I believe that most successful people achieve their greatness because they have something to express inside. It's not the idea of a pet rock to make a lot of money, but many of them earn a tremendous amount of money and respect. And I think, you know, Shakespeare, Thomas Edison, Estee Lauder, Walt Disney, Oprah, Sam Walton, they made a lot of money. But far more than thinking about money when they were doing it, the key to their success was their passion. And it was this inner drive by creating or providing something excellent in a product or service. They were all motivated by the desire to produce the very best that was inside of them. And I call that the Stradivarius effect. Antonio Stradivari made violins for other people to play. He couldn't play the violin very well, but when he made a violin, he signed his name to it. And he said, if you like me, refer me. And if you like me, renew me. And if you don't like it, I'll fix it for you. But play me and play the music of your life on my instrument. And what he didn't realize is that by signing his name to his work and living his own passion, his name and work would outlive him, and each violin would be worth more than $1 million 350 years later. And to me, the Stradivarius ethic is the way I love to live, by really uncovering and discovering your passion. That is the secret to people who make millions. Even Donald Trump. I mean, don't think it's just the money. It's the art of the deal with the Donald. Sure, the Donald has an ego, and he likes to do his you're fired and all of that, but the Donald is a deal maker, and he loves the deal. So I think passion drives us all much more than we think.
So, I mean, when you're talking about passion, you're talking about really highly successful people. I think a great example of that are certainly athletes, and even more specifically Olympic athletes. I mean, people go for years and years and years and years, going from being on a high school team maybe to, you know, being on a team in college, continuing to push through that, maybe going into a semi-pro and then a pro level, and building themselves up in their abilities until they reach the status where they can compete in the Olympics. And I mean, that's pure passion. I mean, there's no way you can deny that. So for people like Olympic athletes, you know, one really has to believe in their natural God-given talent. And it has so much to do with determining what their passions are. So if that is true, does everyone's talents lead them to their passions?
Boy, is that a good question. And that's a loaded question that's a double-edged sword. First of all, talent and passion are definitely the twin powers. They're the twin towers of power. But, you know, sometimes we discover our talents at a very early age, which is true for most of the Olympians. Most of the Olympians had a coach. First, they loved what they were doing. They thought it was really neat. Then a coach said, I see world-class potential in you. And the coach gave them the correct swing or the correct way to do it, and they found that they could hone that natural talent with passion, not their parents' passion, because too often parents tend to push their children in a direction that the parents try to vicariously live their lives over again. But it isn't always the talent that creates the passion. Sometimes the passion uncovers the talent. And I've been working with Olympians for many years, you know, helping mentally train them. And at the world-class level, it's almost all mental. I mean, you have these natural talents, but at that moment of truth, the mind over muscle wins. And I think back to my good friend Bill Toomey. A lot of people don't remember Bill Toomey, but Bill Toomey was a school teacher, and he was at the Olympics in Munich, Germany. And he was sitting in the stands watching this German win the decathlon. 1,200 days later, 4 years later, he won the decathlon in Mexico City, and I was there. And that's because he was training in the rain, and the high jump took place in the rain, and because the German fouled out in the rain, he won. And here's the guy that was a school teacher with a passion for sports. You know, he was a coach and a school teacher, but he never really uncovered those tremendous talents until he did a four-year deal on becoming an Olympian. And a person like Scott Hamilton, for example, overcame a threatening, life-threatening disease to become a champion figure skater. So sometimes the passion for a problem-solving or something that we're making up for gives us the motivation to dig out our talents. So sometimes our passion comes first because we express an interest in something that excites us, and then that passion uncovers the natural and developed abilities. But for the most part, I think that if you dust off your childhood passions and think back of the talents you had, let's say when you were 7 to 15, think about the things you loved to do as a child, and then think about your current hobbies. And as you think about the things you love to do in your off hours or the things you love to do as a child, therein will lie your natural talents. Because natural talents begin to bud and blossom early, but they get nipped in the bud by school teachers. Well, I call it the parent, the peer group, and the professor, who tell us we should be concentrating on something like computers that will earn us money instead of chasing this crazy passion of ours, which, in effect, the talent in that passion may be the key to riches untold. So I think hobbies are normally the best examples of talents, and childhood talents and hobbies will give us a combination of blending passion and talent together.
Gotcha. Well, you know, when we're talking about the blending of passion and talent, it really reminds me a lot of Janet Atwood's book called The Passion Test, Discovering Your Personal Secrets to Living a Life on Fire. Now, one of the things that Janet says is that the ones with the passions, when one really understands what their passions are, that those act as clues, they act as keys to one's personal destiny. What I'm really curious about is, do you believe that's true? And can you talk more about what role you feel one's passions play in helping one to discover their own personal destiny?
Well, I absolutely believe in my heart of hearts and my soul of souls that passion reveals the purpose behind the purpose. There's no question in my mind. I know it's true in my life. I know that's the only reason I've been very successful. And you know, I've been very lucky that Earl Nightingale heard a simple little tape of mine, and his album was the only audio album existing on the earth in a talking voice. All other albums were musical. It was just Earl Nightingale's Strangest Secret as a 45 that won a Grammy. In fact, he's the only speaker that's ever won a Grammy. And then he did Lead the Field, Well, he heard a tape of mine, and because I had a passion for it and he had a passion for it, that led to the $100 million sale of The Psychology of Winning. Now, when I think about passion, there's no way that I possibly could have even met Earl Nightingale unless I would have stuck to it because of the passion. So I always take apart the word motivation. And the word motivation means motive in action. It's your motive, which is your underlying desire in action. And my definition of motivation is an inner force that compels you to behave or perform. It's an inner force. It isn't a travel poster. It isn't somebody with the carrot and the stick. It is this inner fire. And there are two kinds of motivation, and I've studied them. As you know, as a doctor of psychology, I think the greatest motivational psychologist in terms of passion taught us that there's extrinsic and intrinsic. You know, David McClelland of Harvard says we have extrinsic and intrinsic motivation. And extrinsic is from the outside. It means you want to get some money, or you want to get a home, you want to get a car, you want to get something. And then you want status with this peer group you're in. And boy, if that isn't ever driving American culture today, is peer pressure. And then you want status with celebrities and with sports heroes and with experts. Everyone wants to be a hero and an expert. And then there's competition. We all want to keep up with people, and we want to beat somebody, and we want to come in number one. So there's these forces of acquiring, of status, and of competition that drive us. But I can guarantee you that the intrinsic motivations, the desire deep down inside to not have somebody over your shoulder telling you what to do, to be able to do something on your own without help, and then to do something that is so good that you're playing life for a gallery of one. You're playing for your own self-respect and why you were created. And one of the definitions of that would be to play a piece on the piano where no one was listening except you and your creator. And if you played it so well that you were very proud of what you did, you wouldn't need an audience to applaud. You wouldn't need somebody to give you a gold medal or a blue ribbon, because your own concern for excellence and your feeling that you achieved this on your own was such a great thing that passion drives you. So I think that money motivates until a comfort level is reached, but passion motivates for a lifetime regardless of the money.
So when you start talking about comfort level and motivation, I know that a lot of people sometimes can feel afraid or nervous or even scared when they're really going after what they believe in, what they find is really important to them, especially if they haven't been doing that for much of their life. I know this relates to one of your most recently released books called Safari to the Soul. I'm wondering if you'd just take a few moments to share with us what the main message is in that book.
Well, I think I wrote Safari to the Soul for my children and grandchildren so they'd know what was really my underlying passion, motivation in life. And it really has to do with the analogy of life being a jungle. And if life is a jungle, to many people it is. In fact, the 95% of the people on Earth, life is a savage place. But to me, it's a savage paradise. And there was a tremendous book written during World War II called The Jungle is Neutral. And at first I didn't understand it, but now as I've aged and supposedly become more wise, I really understand what's behind it. First of all, if life is a savage paradise, savage to the 95% who are just trying to get a roof over their heads, and let's say it's a paradise to people who are very fortunate to understand how it works, how to work with it, how to create your own environment, how to prepare and respond to what happens in the jungle, and everyone says it's a jungle out here. Well, the truth is, the jungle is neutral. And here's the story. This British colonel was trapped behind enemy lines for 2.5 years. And he overcame malaria, yellow fever, trench foot, scorpions, black mambas, cobras, tigers, poisonous everything and the enemy, because he looked at the jungle as being full of papaya, mango, hiding places, bananas, fresh water, where the enemy could be within 6 feet of you and still not discover you. He saw it as something he could work with. Now, here was a guy who had been a mountain guide before, so he had experience with it. When I went to Africa on my safaris, I got a moment of truth, because I went with no experience as a tourist, and I wanted to go in the most dangerous areas of Kenya, so I had a Maasai warrior as my guide, and all he had was a spear. And we went for a long walk in the wild, and I was very frightened and very nervous because I was a tourist. So here's the story of the tourist and the tour guide. The tour guide, my Maasai warrior, he's smiling, he's laughing, he's enjoying himself. Sure, easy for him. He knows how to work with it. To him, the jungle is a paradise. To me, it's a savage, frightening new place. But in truth, the jungle is neutral. Because as we went on our walk and we came up to 19 lion that were lying under an acacia bush, I began to get a little nervous. I said, I'm high on the food chain. They have four legs, big claws, and big teeth, and they may not have eaten last night. He laughed and said, no, they ate last night, and they smelled you a half hour ago, and they've been watching you for the last 20 minutes. And I said, that's just great. They're trying to pick out which one of them is going to go for me. He said, no, they're actually not. He said, they don't like your taste unless they're old and sick. And I said, there could be an old sick one there. He said, turn left, don't look at them anymore, and we'll walk away, but we won't go any closer because there are some cubs there. I said, you know, it's easy for you, John. You know, you lived out here your whole life. You know how the animals behave. You know how things work. So sure, you know, you're comfortable, you're confident, but I'm not. And he smiled at me and said, Dennis, what you need is cash. And I said, I've got cash. And he said, no, this is a different kind. This is spelled K-A-S-H. It's knowledge, it's the attitude, it's the skills and the habit of the jungle. You need knowledge about the jungle. You need an attitude toward it. You therefore need to get skills in how to deal with it, and you need the habits that will make you a tour guide instead of a tourist. The reason you're frightened is you're inexperienced and a novice. You're a tourist. We're the tour guide. The jungle is neutral, Dennis. You know, Safari to the Soul for me is realizing that if I can get role models and mentors with proven track records of success, I can save 10 years. I can save time by not having to live my life in the jungle by trial and error. I want to live by trial and success. Sure, I'll make some mistakes, but I don't want to repeat my mistakes, and I don't want to be frightened simply because I don't have the knowledge and the skills and the training. So I think that courage is based on skills and training, and that's why people need to take their passion and develop skills and experience around them so they'll look at the jungle as a paradise instead of a savage place that they have trepidation and even putting their foot forward.
Well, you know, whether you're talking about the jungle or whether you're talking about success in any field, from athletics to financial success to relationship success, whatever it is you're working at improving in your life and what passion it is that really makes a difference to you, you know, at Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise, one of the things, as Chris mentioned earlier, that we do is send out to find out what questions our readers and subscribers have that relate to money and their passion. And as a result, one of the most commonly asked questions, and this is so, so important, I hear this type of thing all the time, is how do I make money doing what I love? So I'd like it if you just give us some insight on how people can apply the principles that you've shared with us so far to begin to transform their passions into financial freedom.
Well, that's, you know, that's what it's all about, you know, and that's what I live my life for. My life is to plant shade trees under which I know I'll never sit myself, but shade trees for future generations. And if I can help one person become more successful that's a real, that's like being a teacher who's seen the result of teaching bear fruit. So I think if I were sitting around a group of entrepreneurs like you have on this call, and we were sitting in a circle, I would tell them to think about what they love to do and then ask themselves some questions. First of all, what is it about what I love to do that would save people time or money or both? What is it about what I love to do that would save people time or money or both, and why? Well, the reason I ask that question is that we live in a world accelerating and fast forward. More changes in one day than a grandparent's decade. We are all time scarce. We're all in a prison of time. We don't have enough time, yet we have all there is. Men and women both work. We give our children money instead of our time. And we're just so frustrated that we're looking for time freedom. Well, what is it then? Now, I looked at, in my own career, I was looking back, way back in 1976. And in 1976, the East Germans won most of the gold medals at the Olympic Games in 1976 in Montreal. Bruce Jenner won the decathlon, but the Germans just pounded us. And I found that then in 1980, although we won up Herb Brooks, we went up to Lake Placid, and we had the miracle on ice where we beat the Russians in ice hockey in 1980, we didn't even go to the Olympic Games in 1980 because of the Cold War. And then I began to think in my own mind, America is coming off Vietnam. We're coming off a bad Olympics in 76, except for the miracle on ice. America needs a winner. So I came out with the psychology of winning, because we needed to think of ourselves as winners instead of this society that was trying to wonder why we were even involved in that war. So I go back to the question, what is it that I can offer that isn't being offered? Where is the inefficiency in what is being offered today? In other words, how can I make it more easy? And that's, of course, what Bill Gates did. You may remember that in junior high school, he did this software program that made it easier for the roads to check the traffic. So Bill Gates was really a nerd, trying to solve a traffic problem in junior high school. So he was trying to solve an inefficiency with his passion. What would people want and buy if it were available today? Well, we all wish we would have known about the iPod, and we all wish we would have known about this or that. So how am I saving time and money in what I'm doing now? So take a look at your own life, and in what ways are you able to get time efficiency and money efficiency and effectiveness? And in that lies a way for you to teach other people how to do the same. So whether or not you're making a lot of money, one way you can make a lot of money is help people learn from you, from what you've learned, and put that together in some kind of program as a consultant or a teacher or a trainer. And what are my hobbies? If you take a look at your hobby, you say, is there a way I can turn my hobby, which I love to do, which I do every waking moment if I could, is there a way I can turn a hobby into a business? Well, I can tell you that sea kayaking and boogie boards and Barney the Dinosaur and disposable iPods for toddlers, everyone who's monkeying around with a hobby, even in a game like Bob Kiyosaki did with Rich Dad, Poor Dad, he had his game. You know, he used to teach a program called Money and You in Malaysia, and Bob Kiyosaki and I years ago were lecturing, and he was doing this Money and You program where he had this game, and he had the four quadrants in the game, and he took a game that he had really done as part of a hobby and then turned it into Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and into entire industry. So don't take your hobbies lightly, because in a hobby there may be a home-based business. There may be a way to turn that into revenue, and that's one of the things I would really take a look at. I would take a look at what is it about what I love to do that would save people time or money. And if you can save people time and or money, you'll have all the time and money you've ever wanted in your life.
I think what you're saying is definitely true. I know it's been true of me personally. You know, I've had the fortune of being focused on solving problems at a fairly young age, and have started to see some really fantastic success. But I hate to do this to you, but I'm going to put you on the spot. Basically, you know, there are a lot of people out there with a ton of self-confidence, and they have all the motivation in the world, and they truly believe they can overcome anything that stands in their path. But at the same time, there's another side to people. You know, there are people out there that tell us, you know, they're challenged with things like low self-esteem, with low self-confidence, with the inability to take action. They think that they can't manage their time, or they just don't have the ability to stay focused. Are there any practical steps that you can suggest to our readers, to our listeners, that they can take right now to begin living the principles you're talking about?
Well, I sure hope so, and I think it's really important to be specific. You know, I know that there are naysayers, and you have to avoid dream stealers. So you have to make certain that you share your ideas with people who truly want to see you succeed, and be careful of relatives. Be careful of well-meaning relatives, because, you know, yeah, first of all, you can go to your mom or dad, and they can say, great idea, go out and mow the lawn. Or you can strike out in a baseball game, and your father can say, why don't you play soccer? The ball's bigger. So there are many ways where people can rain on your parade, and the worst thing to do is to blurt out your ideas to fair-weather people or people who are envious of you. Because remember, misery loves company, and people want to keep you with them. They don't want you to outdistance them, because then they'll be jealous of you, and they want to make sure that you're part of the old gang. So make sure that you have a mastermind group of people with similar goals, people who want to get ahead and who truly want to nurture you and are sincere about that, not just giving you lip service. And mastermind once a week with those people, because no matter what kind of environment you find yourself in, whether at home or at work, if it's a little negative, you need to find a positive outlet. If I'm looking at self-esteem, I look at it as a four-legged chair. And I know that one leg is belonging, so that you really have to have an affiliation with some kind of team. You cannot do it alone. You need a buddy system or a team. It's really difficult to succeed alone anymore, because no matter how hard you work out, it's really better to have a buddy working out with you, because when it's raining and cold and you don't feel like it, the other person challenges you, and that's what belonging to an affiliation of our team. That's what these good calls are all about, you know, belonging together or getting successful together. I think the other three legs are worthiness, identity, and competence. And if I look at worthiness, it's really hard today to feel worthy of the best, because you compare yourself too often with sports heroes and multimillionaires and celebrities. And reality television is the most unrealistic thing there is. It's all staged, nothing realistic about it, and it's all done for ratings. So make sure that you are able to talk to yourself with a positive explanatory style and with all due respect, and make sure that you understand that the most important meeting you'll ever have is the one you have silently with yourself in waking moments. So try to understand that this running commentary in your head is the software that is building into a program that will automatically drive the hardware of your life. So talk yourself up, even though it may sound like you're just giving yourself positive thinking pablum. Having an identity is identifying, and one thing I'll really say here is that there's a way for people to find out what their natural talents are for about $500. So for about the last 25 years, I've encouraged people, if they're at a crossroads in their life, or if their children are reaching high school or college age, to go to the Johnson O'Connor Foundation in New York. It's a nonprofit organization named after a man named Johnson O'Connor. And you'll find the Johnson O'Connor Foundation gives a natural gift test that lasts about 2 days that defines 19 gifts that are given to us at conception. When we're conceived, we're handed with the dust from our Creator 19 possible natural talents. And of those 19, each of us has at least 5. Wouldn't it be wonderful if when you were young, you found out what 5 talents you were endowed with and could use those in any way you want. Well, for $500 instead of a Game Boy or a PlayStation or taking a vacation to get away from the frustration of monotony, why not take a natural gift test and arm yourself with a quiver full of arrows that you can shoot out into the world that shows you your natural talents, and that will give you an identity. So if we look at the four legs of belonging to a team, worthiness in your own conversation, an identity through discovering your natural talents, the final one would be one that I missed completely for the first 20 years of my motivational career. I always thought you had to believe it before you could achieve it. And I was heavy on the positive thinking and light on the skills. But boy, what you've just said gives people something solid that they can take home with them. Competency creates passion, motivation, and success, because self-discipline is doing within when you're doing without. And the self-discipline of doing stair-step goals, which means low goals short-term, ratcheting yourself forward by setting lower goals over short periods of time, you have the reinforcing confidence of patting yourself on the back for achieving it, and they're very easy to correct when you miss them. So start out with low goals short-term and develop competent skills that will ratchet yourself forward, because that in itself will give you the discipline of an Olympian or an astronaut, and you'll begin to realize that 1,200 days isn't so long to get anywhere you want. So it means act globally, act locally, while thinking globally. And so, to sum it up, hang around with winners, read biographies of people who have overcome enormous handicaps and obstacles to become successful, then you'll realize that you can do it too. Make sure you turn your car into the Rolling University and listen to positive CDs instead of sports chat. Join positive chat rooms, on the internet. Join every positive teleconference like this that you can possible, and get that mastermind group of motivated friends to have lunch once a week to make sure you don't fall back into the frustration of escape mentality. Now, one of the worst things you can do is watch other people making money having fun on television. That's the greatest waste of a life, is to watch other people loving what they're doing, you building their ratings, making a fortune, while we're watching them to escape from the monotony of the goals we never set. That's the definition of hell. Hell is having to watch a CD of the life you could have lived had you not spent your time watching other people enjoying their lives. And I really, the other thing is, I think, we can talk about this later, but I think your self-worth greatly influences your net worth. And I think unless people believe they're worthy of success, they really won't have the motivation to believe that they can get the training and education. So I think stair-stepping your way to the top is great. And the other things that I'd give them as a check-off list is, I do believe in dressing and looking your best at all times. I don't believe in the Friday is dressed down mentality. I've always felt that I arrive at a place dressed as well as I should, but never underdressing for the occasion. That doesn't mean designer clothing. That just means being clean and dressed for action. And that's why I dress for business every day. Even in my own home-based business, I dress like I'm going to have a meeting, because I sure may have one. I use a positive explanatory style about everything in my life, including the sicknesses and illnesses, because I know I'm getting better, or I'm taking steps to get better. I always introduce myself first when I come into a room, and I always give my own name immediately in every phone call before somebody tries to screen me and find out who's calling. You never want anyone to say to you who's calling. You always want to give your own name up front as if it means something important, because eventually they won't ask who and why, because they'll know that by you giving your name with authority, that you're somebody they should reckon with, and it's a great habit to get into. And also, sitting up front in meetings is important, because you want to be able to ask questions of the person giving the lecture. You don't want to sit in back so you can leave early. And you want to announce your intentions to the world. I usually give a goal-setting seminar. I've been doing this in China now. I give a goal-setting seminar where everyone stands up and announces what they want to happen and what they're selling. And you can't imagine the buying and selling frenzy that goes on within that meeting room simply by announcing that you sell grand pianos or that you want tickets to the Olympic Games or that you're looking for this. By networking with other people and announcing what it is you want, how in the world can you get what you want unless the people that you deal with know what you want? And that's why you have to be willing to commit to the world, even though you're going to get rained on and laughed at. That's why I say, announce to the world what you do, but have a mastermind group who wants to help you get there.
Well, you know, there's one person in particular that I know you've worked with who's very, very good at announcing to the world what they want. Not only that, but it's very interesting that as a result of his efforts, one way or the other, we're all on this call tonight. And I think everyone would agree that one thing that we all have a connection with is the computer. With that said, before I ask the next question, I'd like to let everyone know that there's a very special link that we're going to be giving out at the end of this call. And so to be sure to, if you only have one phone line, be sure to have a pen and a paper ready to write that down. And Chris, be sure to be ready to announce that link. And if you happen to have a separate line for your internet access, then again, be sure to be ready to type that in. But that's a link we're going to be giving out at the end of the call. With that said, the one individual that we're talking about here is, of course, Michael Dell. You've worked very closely at times with the Dell Computer Corporation. I'm wondering if you'd be willing to just take a few minutes and share the Michael Dell story. It's a very, very interesting one. And more importantly, how people can apply the same principles, ideas, and concepts from that story in their own lives.
Oh, boy, I could give the whole call on Michael Dell. He bugs me. He drives me absolutely crazy because here's a guy. He was born in 1968. In 1968, I was a brilliant psychologist. Where have I been? I don't have a clue. He was sucking a pacifier, crawling around in his diapers when I was already thinking of myself as successful. Somehow, in the next 30 years, he became the richest person in the world under the age of 40. I have to say under 40 because Bill Gates is the richest person in the world, but he's an old man now at 49. You know, Bill Gates, 48, 49. The Google and Yahoo guys are almost catching up with Michael Dell, but they're catching up pretty fast. But Michael Dell is a guy that, first thing he did was get a stamp collection and form the Michael Dell stamp auction. And then the next thing he did was quickly try to take the GED exam so he didn't have to go to school. He had somebody come over to give him the equivalency exam, and his mother said he's taking his bath. And the woman said, I thought he was a Vietnam veteran. She said, no, he's in the third grade. And she said, oh, my gosh, well, I came here to give him the high school. And he came out in his bathrobe and said, why can't I take it? Why do I have to go to school? It's a waste of time. We should have known then that Michael Dell was going to be a special guy because the next thing he did was sell newspaper subscriptions. And you know what the business is? Everyone will tell you it's the number of calls you make that will make you successful. Well, he doesn't want to buy just that. He wants to be high probability prospect oriented. And we all need to find out who wants to buy what we're selling. So what did Michael Dell do? He didn't knock on every door in Houston. Instead, he went to the post office and the bank, and he went to the library, and he found out who had just bought a home, who had just gotten married, who had just moved into the neighborhood. And then he formed the Michael Dell Welcome Wagon. He gave them the Houston Post. The first day they moved in, he said, do you want it all during the week or on Sunday? He gave them the alternate clothes, showed up at their door the minute they were moving in, was first in. He said, I'm not going to knock on people's doors who probably already have the newspaper. I'm going to find people who probably are just moving into upscale neighborhoods who want the newspaper. And he drove to the University of Texas in a new white BMW with an Apple IIe computer on his lap. we should have known it was dangerous, because then he took it apart and found out there's nothing different in computers. So he just made them to order. He saw a Burger King ad and said, have it your way. Sesame seed bun, mayonnaise, hold the mayo, hold the lettuce, put in. So he made computers to order, and he had a little business going. He quit school in his freshman year, and the rest is history. But the interesting thing about him is he was first into retail for computers and first out. So in 1990, Dell Computer was sold in all the Computerland stores, and in 1991, they were no longer sold there. Why? Because he knew that direct was the battle cry of the future, eliminating the middle person, eliminating the inefficiency, giving it to them their way, quick. Real-time inventory, off the shelf, but make them think they're getting it exactly like they're designing it. Design it for the customer. So he's been able to move from mass marketing to me marketing by giving each individual and finding out a desire analysis in advance, and then still giving them computers that are just like everybody else's, but you're made to believe, because of the personal service you get from the internet and the telephone, that you're getting something customized. And he's the master of customization, of me marketing, and of saving time, and he's now owns the lion's share of the PC market and the lion's share of this whole industry. And it's all because he's impatient, he wants to save people time and money, and he wants to give it to them their way. And boy, I'll tell you, he's really a study for me to figure out how I can eliminate all the extra steps in bureaucracy in my own life that I've done just by getting into bad habits. And so what I'm doing is taking an audit in my own life and saying, what routines am I going through that are a total waste of time and that are not leading me toward the achievement of my goals? And I'm starting to get rid of the dead wood in my extra time, in the time I'm spending just majoring in minors and reading emails that don't mean anything.
Well, I know that those different habits we all get into, whether they're physical habits or thought pattern habits, can definitely rule our lives. And especially when people have intensely negative or traumatizing type situations, it can really throw you for a loop. I know that one of the things you've specialized in is working with returning POWs. You know, what's that like? What types of lessons can we learn from those experiences where we've developed habits that aren't as effective for us as they really should be?
Well, that the POW is a good. In fact, I did my doctorate. I did my dissertation on why no American prisoner ever escaped from a minimum security camp, but many prisoners escape from a maximum security camp. The reason for that is that leaders are always put in a maximum security camp because they're always trying to get home or get out or get a plan. People who are not motivated are put in minimum security camps because they know they can't get out and they don't try. What I learned from POWs is that we all, no matter where we are living in our imaginations, and we're caught in this world between our ears. And we're all doing within while we're doing without. The problem with a POW is that he's not an Olympian, because an Olympian is training for the games he knows he wants to participate in. An astronaut is training for the moonshot, but a prisoner of war has to train while he's in prison, not really realizing whether he's going to get out or not, but believing that he is. So what the POWs did is they rehearsed positive things by recall and precall. So I call it instant replay of past success. When things are not going well, you need to replay your success. And then you need to project in your imagination where you want to be, because the mind can't distinguish between simulated activity and real activity. So that's why I've always told the story of Colonel George Hall, who was a four-handicapped golfer, always played one round of golf in his imagination in his 8x8 cell with black pajamas and bare feet and a pail and a plate of rice, and he never went outside, and his teeth rotted and his eyes went bad and he got atrophied and withered, but he played one round of golf very well, incidentally, in his imagination. And he played every putt, every stroke, He played games that the pros had played. He played games that he had played, but he played in his mind. And for some reason, when you play it in your mind, you create a pattern in your brain. And when he came back, he played in the New Orleans Open and shot a 76, 4 over par, right onto his handicap. The news media was astounded and said, "Congratulations, beginner's reentry luck." He said, "Luck, are you kidding? I never three-putted the green in 5.5 years of solitary confinement." What I learned from POWs is if you get in the habit of feeling you're never going to get out, you may never get out. It's an imaginary prison as well as a real prison that we live in, and therefore you really have to do within when you're doing without and create the habit pattern and experience of a winner so that when you actually get there, it's like old home week, and it's like nothing new, and therefore it's so comfortable to succeed. It's because you've been through so many dress rehearsals. So the POW has taught me that dress rehearsal can take place even in the most trying and negative circumstances. You can still play to win from within.
Wow. Wow. So that's a pretty powerful concept when you're using your mind in a way that can literally change the results that you're getting in your life and whatever it is that you're doing. With that idea in mind, what else would you like to elaborate on? What's the single biggest, most important idea that you'd like to leave people with tonight?
Well, you know, I try to plant the seeds of greatness for future generations. So I'm working on a leadership program, a family leadership program called the Seeds of Greatness System, so that we can create winning children. I'm really worried about future generations and immediate gratification. So I guess the ideas I'd like to leave everyone is that you have to believe you're as good as the best, but not necessarily better than the rest. So that's what I say, Dennis, you're as good as the best, but no better than the rest. So in other words, winners believe in their passion when that's all they have to hang on to. And so you have to believe in that passion when you really don't have any, let's say you don't have a track record that shows that you shouldn't believe in it. You still need to believe in it because the passion is what's going to drive you to success. So failure is always a detour rather than a dead end. It's an event, not a person. And I've always looked at failure as a learning experience or target correction. And I think one of the best things, you know, I've got so much failure in my life that if failure were fertilizer, I'd have big bags of horse manure all over my room. However, failure is the fertilizer of success, because it enables you to mulch it and lay it down and grow future ideas without making the same mistakes. So look at a mistake as something you're not going to repeat. And finally, I think the most important idea is that your self-worth will, to a large extent, determine your eventual net worth. In other words, you will earn and accumulate probably what you believe you're worthy of having. Because unless you're worth it, you won't be worth the effort that it takes to get it or do it.
Wow. Well, I mean, the knowledge, the insights, the ideas, the concepts that you've just shared are so immensely powerful. And I know that I personally am going to go back and listen to this recording over and over again just to reinforce those ideas in my mind, in my everyday life. I know that you've developed so many programs, so many books that have changed millions and millions of people's lives. And one of the most interesting things to me, anyway, is one of your new collections called the Platinum Collection with the Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise.
Well, it's really funny. You know, I think Chris, you know, Chris Atwood would say, "Hey, wait a minute, Dennis, you know,
yeah, what are you doing there, Dennis?
Yeah, where'd you get this name? Did you get permission? We didn't give a release to you." But Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise is simply, you know, healthy is I've taken the Olympic training program, mental training program for the Olympics, and put it into the ultimate fitness and wellness program. And, you know, kind of do a little age-defying, disease-fighting, fat-burning thing of my own, so you kind of overcome all the fat stuff that's going around. So that's the health part of it. The wealth part is I've taken the 12 secrets of self-made multimillionaires, and I've added those secrets that I've learned from people like Michael Dell to The Richest Man in Babylon, which is a classic that I love by Richard Clayson, that just shows us that in Babylon, nothing's changed about making money. And then I've added my favorite Russell Conwell, Acres of Diamonds, to that, because you'll find that happiness lies right between your eyes in the own backyard of your own mind. And I think that's why the passion of mining your own ideas is important. So that's the wealthy part of it. The wise part is that I've taken the psychology of winning that I'm known for, and I went over to Caesar's Palace with a financial group of people and did a live psychology of winning for the 21st century, a long series of recordings. And then I took the psychology of winning for women with my two PhD daughters, Debbie and Dana, and we did the psychology of winning for women along with that. So that's kind of the wise part, would be the psychology of winning, both as a man and as a woman together, and then the other healthy and wealthy part. So that's what the Platinum Collection is all about.
Gotcha. Well, I know that normally you sell that for $169, and that you're willing to knock some of the price off and create a very special deal for people who are listening tonight, who are on this call, or even the people who are listening, to the recorded audio or reading the transcripts a little bit later on. And I just wanted to let everyone know that there's a very special link. This is the link that I was mentioning earlier that you can go to in order to get that special discounted price on this phenomenal Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise, Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise Platinum Collection. The link is as follows. It's www.healthywealthynwise. That's Healthy, Wealthy, the letter N, wise.com/Waitley. WAITLEY. Just one more time, really quick. www.healthywealthynwise.com/Waitley. And I really wanted to say thank you, Dennis, for being willing to discount that price to our listeners, to our readers, and make that available to them. That's really phenomenal.
Well, I really want to do that. I think there's 18 CDs, and there's some special things in there, and I really want to do that. At this point, my motivation is much greater than the money. It really is planting the shade tree. So I appreciate the opportunity. As you all know, I don't hawk or tout my products. I figure that if they're good enough, then people will pass the word on them. That's why I appreciate so much being on this call and being part of a winning team like Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise, and like, Let's Crusade with you as well. So I really, it's been an exciting interview for me. I'm lecturing all over China now. The Olympic Games are coming in 2008 in Beijing, and I'm a sports psychologist for the Chinese athlete. I'm wondering why I should have done that. I feel like Benedict Arnold now, because they're hell-bent on winning 45 gold medals to our 42. And I said, wait a minute, I'm not so sure that's part of the plan. But at any rate, I'm lecturing there because they really want to be winners too. And we have to understand that we need all the personal and professional development we can possibly get to maintain leadership in the 21st century with the hungry immigrants with digital assistants who are coming along. The handheld wireless digital world with China leading the way is a formidable competitor, and that's why each of us has to really stay on these calls and we really have to stay healthy, wealthy, and wise, and raise the high jump bar on ourselves. And I'm challenging my own kids to do that, to keep raising the bar. And let's be the first society in history who's ever survived its own success, who's ever stayed on top rather than fallen by the wayside simply because they won the Super Bowl a few times. You know, we need to do that because we don't want to be like every other culture who's just said, what happened? Or how did the Chinese end up being number one? Or why couldn't we stay on top? Why didn't they do something? Instead, we need to say, here's what we're going to do in order to be as competitive and as helpful as possible. So, again, I appreciate you very much and appreciate you having me on this call.
Well, you know, it was really, really fantastic having this opportunity, Dennis. And I wanted to say thank you to Chris. Chris, thank you so much for bringing us all together here. And I would like to kind of pass the torch to you at this point to wrap things up.
Great. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being with us and for co-hosting this call. And Dennis, thank you for sharing your wisdom. You know, you, every time I've ever heard you, you are unbelievably inspiring, uplifting, and open new doors to new worlds, and you've done that for us tonight. I think it's actually no accident that you have created a program, this 18-CD collection that is called Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise. That's obviously meant for us, for all of us and our readers, right?
I think so, and it was serendipity, and it, you know, it's a chicken-egg situation, but I'm very happy to be part of your team in this regard, and it's a great concept. I can't think of anything better than healthy, wealthy, and wise. Believe me, if you can have those three things, well, you're really on top in life, and I'd rather have that than notoriety. I'd rather have the respect of one child than the adoration of the masses, and the way you can do that is to be healthy, wealthy, and wise.
Absolutely. It's beautiful. Thank you so much, Dennis.
Thanks, Chris, and thanks to all of you. Look forward to meeting many of you, and look forward, Chris, to more in the future.
Absolutely. For all of our listeners, again, that link is www.healthywealthy, the letter N is in Nancy, wise.com/Waitley. You can take advantage of this incredible opportunity to have Dennis Waitley in your home teaching you how to be healthy, wealthy, and wise. In our upcoming interviews, I invite you to join us in 2 weeks. We're going to be interviewing Raymond Aron, the creator of the Wealth Creator Source, and who is appearing this year on stages with Tony Robbins and Robert Kiyosaki and Donald Trump, some of the people we've been talking about tonight. And on July 5th, we'll be interviewing David Lynch, the director and writer, award-winning, Golden Globe award-winning director, been nominated for several Academy Awards. David Lynch directed Mulholland Drive, The Elephant Man. He was the creator and director of Twin Peaks. That will be an incredible, incredible interview. For those of you who are a little bit outside the box, you just don't quite fit in with the mainstream of society, you absolutely want to be on this call, because David Lynch has proven that one can be aligned with one's passions, be completely outside of the mainstream of society, and still be incredibly successful and enjoy the adoration and the respect of peers throughout one's industry and throughout the world. Later in July, we'll be interviewing an internet marketing legend, Stephen Pierce, who created a huge fortune in trading commodities and stocks, and then was so successful in his internet marketing activities that he inspired a whole new generation of internet marketers. And Stephen also is a great person, a great quality of heart at the same time. You're going to love that interview. In the beginning of August, we will have Stephen Simon of the Spiritual Cinema will be coming back to co-host and invite a couple of his Academy Award-winning directors and writers, and we'll be announcing those soon. And then in September, we're so happy to be We're so happy that Byron Katie, the author of Loving What Is, number one best-selling author, And with her latest book, I Need Your Love, Is That True? Byron Katie is one of Janet and my greatest mentors, an amazing woman, and we know that you'll love that as well. So we are so happy that you have joined us again. Join us again in a couple of weeks. I'm going to open up the lines now, and we'll say goodnight. Good night, everyone. Thank you so much for being with us.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much.